My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Best Quality Vacuum, the duck feed show about Better Call Saul now.
Yeah, nothing else waiting ahead of us aside from the rest of this.
And the Tuco Chronicles and Huel's Rules.
And what do we call it? The Holly Files?
The Holly Files, and then there's also Slip and Jimmy.
Oh, fuck.
I've watched one episode of Slip and Jimmy, and it's so much worse than you think it is.
I can't wait.
It's so fucking bad. If this show is popular enough for us to do like live shows and stuff, it'd be a good live show.
Yeah.
Maybe if we do like a duck fest, we'll do it. We'll watch all of Slip and Jimmy and just expose people to the worst of fucking Slip and Jimmy.
Pull it's clips.
Horrible.
Yeah.
It's fucking horrible.
But before we do that, we're talking about Uno. This is the first episode of Better Call Saul, written by Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould, directed by Gilligan, and it originally aired on February the 8th of 2015.
Yeah, onto this new series. And this wrapping up is what made us want to finally cover the Breaking Bad universe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was no longer a moving target.
Yeah.
New art.
Mm-hmm.
It's not cum, it's frosting.
We assure you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huge thanks to Zilla for putting that together.
Yeah. So check that out for sure. This is our first episode. It does so much.
Yeah.
It's very, every time I go to Better Call Saul, it takes a little while to adjust to the pace.
Mm-hmm.
The pace of the show is slower than Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
But the show, this episode, watching it again, what really impressed me is the economics of it.
Mm-hmm.
This episode establishes our new cast of characters, a lot of, unsaid dynamics and stuff. We are kind of flashing back to Saul Goodman's previous life
when
he was a upstart lawyer named Jimmy McGill in Albuquerque in 2002.
Yeah. We're going back 6 years before the beginning of Breaking Bad. And we've never met Jimmy. We have no idea what his life was like before, you know, we met him in, you know, when he was in full Saul Goodman mode, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the development of the show, Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould started talking about making this spinoff featuring Saul Goodman when Gould was writing the, episode Better Call Saul in 2009.
Yes.
So very early on. And the, you know, cause they just love this character.
Mm-hmm.
The earliest pitch was a half hour comedy with a new client every week.
And that's what I thought this was going to be. Like, that is the easiest putt for a comedic character like that.
Well, it's worth noting, I don't know, you know, you and I haven't, I don't think, talked about this, but I was so fucking skeptical of this.
Oh God, same. Yeah.
This was the worst idea I'd ever heard. Like, I was like, there's no way they're going to fucking do that. Like, this show doesn't need a spinoff. It doesn't need a prequel.
Mm-hmm.
This character can't support it. There's no reason to do this.
Yeah. I had all the love in the world, for Saul as a character. The idea of looking at how he was made, you know, I didn't think that there was a story there because he just kind of existed.
It almost never works out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's almost always a bad idea.
It's like Wolverine
media that does this. It's exactly. James. It's Wolverine origins.
Yeah.
I don't need to know about that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and a comedy pitch would have made a lot of sense. For this, I also would have been skeptical of that because it would have been such a swerve. It turns out that, you know, Gilligan and Gould were also skeptical of that.
Mm-hmm. And so they kind of kept batting this around. Like, the initial idea was to have Saul there as a comic relief character for four episodes, but you had Bob Odenkirk and he was doing really good work with the character and he stuck around. And so, you know, they had asked him like, hey, would you be interested in doing a spinoff? Like as early as the, Breaking Bad season 3 finale, Full Measure, when they were, when they were filming that.
Yeah. Because, you know, they had him on board, they decided, listen, we're going to play to our strengths. We don't know how to make a half hour comedy show. We don't know how to make a legal courtroom drama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and kind of basic going from that principle, they started asking, how does one become Saul Goodman?
Mm-hmm.
You know, many ways Breaking Bad is the story of how Walt becomes Heisenberg.
Yeah.
How does somebody become Saul Goodman?
Right. Like, what is the problem that solves if it is done intentionally? Right. Like what leads to that? And this is kind of continuing the kind of broader discussion of like identity. Between these characters, right? Like,
yes,
Jimmy McGill, you know, as like the real person has put on several masks out of necessity, right?
Yeah. And to kind of show this, we have a real slow burn tragedy.
Yeah.
This show is more character focused than Breaking Bad, and ended up even slower than they originally planned. Mm-hmm. They originally planned for Jimmy to transition into Saul Goodman at the end of the first season.
Yeah.
And that takes forever.
It's not until the end of season four.
It's a real slow burn. The slowest of burns.
I'm convinced that we have the Sir Vampire tweet because of this show.
Yeah. Could certainly be. Yeah,
Surf Dracula. Sure. Yeah.
Surf Dracula. Yeah. And it's weird. It sounds like I'm damning it. What I'm doing is I'm reckoning with my initial feelings of being off-put and then growing to love it.
Yeah.
Like I love Better Call Saul. It's not too slow for me.
No.
It's just an adjustment that took effort.
It concerns itself with different things. And like, I also kind of expected this to be like a courtroom drama, a genre that I enjoy, I think is broadly enjoyed by a lot of people, right?
Yeah.
This is.
And it's snappy.
Yeah.
You know, the show is not snappy.
No.
It is the antithesis of snappy.
Mm-hmm. It is way more interested in the inner workings of like people's needs almost. Right.
It's that. And then it's also just taking its time with everything.
Yeah.
In addition to that, like there's a lot of screen real estate. We'll talk about when we actually get into the episode, but things that could be portrayed more economically are not.
Mm-hmm.
And it ends up adding up to something very beautiful. From an individual choice perspective, it's sometimes hard for me to decide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just the quick example in this first episode is how long we spend in the cold open.
Yeah, yeah.
In Monochroma Hall. Like, that is very, very, very languidly shot.
It feels indulgent.
Yes. Yeah. You know, and again, the end result's perfect. Mm-hmm. Like, I fucking love this show. It just ends up feeling like the priorities are different.
Mm-hmm.
They want to string it out.
Yeah.
You know, and this will get a little bit eye-rolly at a certain point when they start hinting at things that we know from Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
You know, mildly. Again, you trust them. You know, yeah. The equation solves at the end.
Mm-hmm. But. Yeah. I mean, like, to that, I needed to get adjusted to this. Like, I watched the first season and then dipped out, like, until season five aired. Yeah.
Same. Like, mm-hmm. I think I maybe watched the first season or the first two seasons. I was like, you know what? I can't watch something this slow.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what I would have done if I, you know, I watched the five seasons, caught up, mm-hmm. and then watched the last season as it was airing.
Yeah.
And that is the way that I think is good to experience this. If I was waiting a year mm-hmm. between each season, I would have lost interest because of the kind of pace that the show goes at.
Then it kind of Venture Brothers, right? Because of COVID and just a whole bunch of other things, like you had longer delays in between seasons too.
Yep. And that, to me, I don't like that.
Yeah.
It's not for me.
Mm-hmm.
As the show developed, it was always the plan for Vince Gilligan to leave the show running to Peter Gould. Mm-hmm. You know, he would do this as early in, he does this early in season three.
Yes.
Kind of swaps over and lets Peter Gould drive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about the major characters here, because like this is a day in the life of Jimmy McGill, but like we're mm-hmm. going to, you know, we're meeting some important people who are going to be with us for pretty much the entire series.
Yes.
Yeah.
Some of which are even in the credits that we don't meet yet.
Yes.
Very, very important.
Yeah. No, no Nacho this week.
No Michael Mando. One of the things I think about with Nacho is the fucking temerity to be a white guy and naming a Hispanic character Nacho.
Oh, God. Yeah.
It plays out fine on screen and stuff. Uh-huh. I could never.
Nope.
I think I would die first. Like, there's a real exec describing a Ninja Turtle, like, fellow kids thing, but for racism.
Yeah.
It's like,
woof.
Yeah, rough stuff. So we know Saul Goodman,
mm-hmm.
But we don't know Jimmy McGill. We don't know what he was like.
Yeah.
So we get to meet him, and he is in a rough spot.
Yes.
He is a scam artist who's trying to break good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's trying to start up his own law firm on the straight and narrow. He's later in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's 41. And he's doing this in the shadow of his brother, who is very successful,
mm-hmm.
Chuck.
Yes. Chuck McGill, who is kind of the opposite here. Like, he is very clearly, like, gunning for his approval and affection and looking at him as a model of success, despite Chuck's kind of personal failings. Like, he's
I read it a little, like, slightly different than him seeing Chuck as a model for success and more just Chuck's his brother.
Yeah.
I don't think he wants to be Chuck. I think that he assumes some built-in love that's not there.
Yeah, yeah.
you know, as a thing. He definitely does want affection mm-hmm. and approval. He wants recognition. Mm-hmm. He has shrugged off the things of his past mm-hmm. and cannot escape them.
No, no.
You know, the opening court case is very important in this. Mm-hmm. You know, him being like, if I was judged for everything I did as a kid, he is.
Yes.
His brother, that's all his brother sees in him.
Yeah. He never, you know, and it's all anybody else can see too. You know, like that you get this moment with the Kettlemans early on in this, where just they say like, oh, you're the kind of lawyer guilty people hire.
Yes.
Right. Like people, you know? People can see it on him and he is never able to shirk that.
Yes. He's a prisoner of his past.
Yeah.
You know, so he wants approval, but he also wants to be free of that. Mm-hmm. You know, because one of the things that he knows and we know from Breaking Bad is he's got immense talent.
Yeah.
He's really good at this. Mm-hmm. And just not being recognized for it. That's where we get kind of foils or shades of Walt and his chemistry stuff.
Yes.
You know, both of them are characters who did what they had to do to be recognized as being as good at what they are as they are. Mm-hmm.
And part of the tragedy of this is he finds several ways that he, things that he is incredibly good at, right? Like you can kind of roll your eyes at the slowness of, okay, we have Jimmy McGill, not Saul Goodman, and he's doing elder law, but like, he's incredibly good at making those people like that, like him.
Yeah. Yeah. He's really good at it. He's full of skills that are not recognized.
Yes.
You know, and the tension comes from him having to fall back on the skills that actually get results. Mm-hmm. Which are also, you know, the con man shit mm-hmm. that he does. Bob Odenkirk originally was not going to do this. He just mm-hmm. wanted to spend some time with his family. Total cuck move. but his son overheard him talking about it and said, like, listen, you would disappoint a lot of people if you didn't take that up. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine Bob Odenkirk not feeling crazy about almost not doing this. This is career defining in a way that, like, very hard to explain.
This is such a second act maker for
100%.
Him. 100%.
Yeah. His biography is called like Comedy, 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 Drama. that's about this turn.
Yeah.
Like him learning to do this thing that is totally new to him. Mm-hmm. We got a little bit of that in Breaking Bad, but this is masterful work.
Yeah.
This is so fucking good. Mm-hmm.
Like out of nowhere. And like that you have two comedic actors, Bob Odenkirk and Michael McKean, hitting it out of the park is like, it's hard to it is hard to reckon with how unlikely that felt.
It fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Like again, career defining performances from two people who've been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Michael McKean was on Laverne and Shirley for fuck's sake.
Yeah. He's in Spinal Tap.
Yeah.
Like, and he's doing again, like some of his best work. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If not his best work.
Yeah. Bob really struggled to play Jimmy, right? Like Jimmy is a mess with a lot of like bad family stuff going on. And Bob Odenkirk has that in his past too, like a really troubled relationship with his dad. You know, he was kind of made into a parent pretty early on because of mm-hmm. that, you know, and like a lot of that informed the character, but like there was kind of some minor, like I think people maybe played it up just like, oh, he hates playing Jimmy McGill because of, you know, it just like how emotionally taxing it is. Like, no, he probably doesn't like it. I don't read it that he hates it. It's just like, oh, it takes a lot out of him.
Yeah. It's resonant.
Yeah.
Him. His brother Chuck, as we mentioned, played by Michael McKean of the Christopher Guest averse mm-hmm. thing. When the show begins, he's not quite defined. Mm-hmm. The main thing is he's been laid up for a year with electromagnetic sensitivity.
Yes.
Here. Eventually, he was going to be supportive, or not eventually, early on.
Yes.
He's going to be supportive. Jimmy is going to help him try to beat the disease, but he is the villain of the show, mm-hmm. of the beginning of the show.
Yes.
Here.
Yeah.
Little trivia, Ed Begley Jr. auditioned for the role of Chuck. Mm-hmm. Ed Begley Jr. is great.
Yeah.
Like he's a really good actor and stuff. It would have been very different. I don't think he would have done as well, but I would have been interested to see it.
Same. I'm glad that we got Ed Begley Jr. in the way that we did. He's great as Cliff Maine.
He's super good. Yeah. Everybody who, if somebody shows up from the Christopher Guestiverse, like if a Mighty Wind veteran shows up in the show, you're in good hands.
Yeah. Oh man. It's a shame we didn't get like Fred Willard in this.
He would have been fucking killed it.
Yeah.
What a loss. I love Fred Willard so much.
Yeah.
He's so funny in A Mighty Wind. Uh-huh. Like, that movie is good, even though you have to tank Eugene Levy's performance.
Yeah.
Where he's basically the guy who made The Matrix in Ready Player One. Mm-hmm. He does. He plays it exactly the same, and I wanted to strangle him every second he was on screen.
But you get
and such, I like Eugene Levy.
But like my favorite joke in the entire movie is the album cover for his like depression album, like yeah. him in the middle, like standing in his own grave that he dug for himself.
Yeah, pretty good. the funny movie.
Yeah. so like Chuck McGill, like there was a lot of empty space left for this. And it ends up being like a lot of the work that Odenkirk and McCain did together to develop their dynamic that kind of defines what we get. You know, it is not just that Chuck is solely responsible for, you know, the fact that we get Saul, but like he foresees it. And in trying to stop it, almost guarantees that it is going to happen.
He makes it correct. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Like the fact that he does not trust Jimmy is what makes Jimmy become the thing he doesn't want him to become.
Yes.
You know, one of the many facts, mm-hmm. right? Like any tragedy has many authors. This is going to be a big Rube Goldberg machine mm-hmm. that ultimately leads to the downfall of the Salamancas. we also meet Howard Hamlin, mm-hmm. Chuck's law partner at the prestigious firm Hamlin, Hamlin & McGill, or HHM, mm-hmm. Played by Patrick Fabian, who I did not know from anything else.
Same, yeah.
He was originally going to be the antagonist for Jimmy, mm-hmm. You know, acting as the kind of younger brother that Chuck always wanted. And this also kind of shifted around. All the little vestigial versions of this that mm-hmm. you read development of exist in this early season.
Yes.
In this first season, we even get the like, you know, group of goofy clients.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's shades of the comedy.
Yeah.
Version of this. There's shades of the version with Chuck being supportive. There's Howard Hamlin does play like an antagonist early on.
Yeah. And I love how that is subverted in this. I mean, like Howard Hamlin, I really enjoy as a character because he does suck. Like he does mistreat Kim, but like him being a douche is like not actually a character, like a moral failing that brings him into the stakes of the Breaking Bad universe. Like there's nothing that he does that makes him deserve what he gets.
Nothing. Yeah. Not even a little bit. And even then he's under like immense pressures we don't understand.
Yes.
One of my favorite turns in the episode, we start getting stuff into his home life. Mm-hmm. And just an incredible performance as well. Like mm-hmm. he plays like a cartoon.
Yeah.
When you first see him with the tan and the blonde hair, he looks like he's in the Barbie movie or something, you know? And this is very intentional. This idea of making him almost like a broad archetype that would be in a comedy mm-hmm. of this, like he's the kid who runs the ski camp across the lake
yeah.
where the rich kids are, you know, but he's not, he's so much more than that. And one of the strengths of Vince Gilligan's shows is this idea of there's more to everybody,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I think that Better Call Saul does this better than Breaking Bad does. Yeah. I love both shows basically equally, but the triumph of Better Call Saul is that everybody gets that treatment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I put her last, not just because, you know, not because she's less important. Like she is, you know, one of the co-protagonists of the show. But only because we don't get a lot of her here because they didn't know what to do with her. Kim Wexler, one of my favorite characters in television.
Yeah. Kim's great.
Yeah.
Played by the great, Reese Seahorn. Mm-hmm. Rhea Seahorn. She worked in the HHM mailroom with Jimmy, and they're very close friends. It's undefined early in the series whether they're friends or romantic.
Mm-hmm.
I hear it. This is going to grow.
Yes.
As things. Very similar to Aaron Paul, she was not planned to be a big part of the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's going to be kind of Jimmy's moral core, but again, there's more to her. They mm-hmm. expanded her role. It takes a while before she becomes what she can be.
Yeah.
And thus.
And like with Chuck, like Rhea Seahorn just kind of came up with a bunch of stuff that ended up becoming part of the story. You know, this mysterious, you know, this mysterious past that she has that she doesn't like talking about, like her relative assertiveness compared to him.
Yes.
And you know, ultimately the innate dependence, right?
Yeah. It's one of my favorite depictions of love.
Yes.
In a TV show,
mm-hmm.
Similar to the thing I kept saying in Breaking Bad, like I love Walt's love of Jesse. Mm-hmm. I think it's incredibly complicated.
Yeah.
Kim and Jimmy's love is also very complicated.
Mm-hmm. And almost never like directly stated, right?
Yes. Like it's one of my all time favorite movies in TV is when it is. Mm-hmm. We'll get to that. good shit.
Yeah.
You know, and also just made me discover this actress who's really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are more characters are going to show up. You know, we talk about the protagonist of this the show, there are kind of four.
Yeah.
You know, it's Jimmy, Kim, and then Nacho, who we had mentioned, and then Mike.
Mm-hmm.
Is kind of a quad protagonist of this series.
Yes.
They get rolled in general slowly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's get into it. We get there's stuff that will pop up during the episode, and we have six seasons to talk about, so we have time to go over all this stuff.
We do.
I'm like just freaking out wanting to talk about stuff that doesn't happen for like 4 years.
Gary, it was so hard. It was so fucking hard to not just roll into episode two and keep going.
Yeah. It's very tempting, uh-huh. You know, and it just like, I don't want to burn myself out.
Yeah.
Monochromaha, I also just want to give credit. That's a Will Hughes phrase. So just, I want no one to think I'm clever. I stole that from Will.
Yeah. It's Omaha, Nebraska, and everything's shot in black and white here. Basically anything that takes place after Breaking Bad, is in black and white. This is how every season would begin, is with kind of a continuation of the story, where it is not Saul Goodman. It is Gene Takovic, Saul mm-hmm. with a mustache. He fulfilled the prophecy. He's managing a Cinnabon in a mall in Omaha.
Yep.
Like just weird, bizarre, uncanny moment firing this up, and you hear the ding, 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 ding. I'm like, is that the Ink Spots? Like, yeah, no, it's the Ink Spots.
They do every song that way.
Yeah.
Ink Spots are amazing. Big formula. Mm-hmm. This is the scene that is very indulgent, I think.
Yes.
Because we play the entire Ink Spots song here. That is more than we need mm-hmm. for this. We get a little shadow of Jesse looking at the guy picking up his kids who he thinks is a hitman.
Mm-hmm.
Where this tough guy stares at Gene, you know, but it just turns out he sees somebody behind him.
Yeah.
You know, they're trying to tell us that one of the things that I think that Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul is great at is showing people living in non-prison prisons.
Yes.
You know, and that's what this is.
Mm-hmm.
We need to understand that Jimmy is fucking miserable.
Mm-hmm.
It's winter time. He's working in, you don't have, that's the opposite of Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm.
He returns to his shitty apartment.
Yeah.
He mixes up a strong drink,
mm-hmm.
Rusty Nail, Drambuie, Doors, and lemon juice.
Yeah.
Very strong drink.
I want to make one of these, but I don't want to buy a bottle of fucking Drambuie.
No. Well, I mean, it'll last you forever, but yeah. Like, you won't drink it again.
No.
He just puts on TV and just flipping through channels and eventually decides to close the blinds, pull out this box of old photos, a Band-Aid box that will become important later,
mm-hmm.
and a VHS tape, and it's old Better Call Saul commercials.
Yeah.
He's tearing up.
Yes, he's watching his glory days. Like all that he has left is this production, you know, but just the master tape of these commercials.
Yeah. And just, you know, he is deeply unhappy.
Mm-hmm.
As unhappy as someone can be.
Yeah. The only thing that is in color in the Monochromaha sequences is the reflection of the TV in his glasses.
Yeah. Then we get our title sequence and music. So the idea, it'll be a VHS shot of something associated with Saul from the city.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it starts with the inflatable Statue of Liberty.
Yeah.
Thing. Little Wikipedia said at worst, the internet is full of nerds.
Thing. Mm-hmm.
Did you notice in any of your research or looking up in the show that people seem to be obsessed with the fact that we didn't get the origin of this thing?
The origin of the
inflatable Statue of Liberty?
We do get the origin of it. We see it. We see where it was before.
But we don't see, like, we don't get the story of him installing it or something like that. People are just hung up on this.
It's just implied. It's like,
I agree with you. I'm not saying it's a thing that people keep talking about. Like,
yeah.
It's weird.
Like, do they want to see him like, you know, hiring Huel to carry that up,
to put it up there?
Yeah.
And probably in like a sequence with with music over it where they play the whole song and he just slowly puts it together. And then that's probably what they want.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's fucking bizarre.
Yeah.
So the sequence on this, they'll show something like that. As the series goes on, the VHS tape gets more degraded.
Mm-hmm.
And we get our new theme song, which is very short.
Yes.
It is just very brief and to the point. We're going to spend a lot of time on cold opens and not very much time on a title.
No. I love this guitar lick on this.
It's a nice lick.
Yeah. Also like there's a full version of this. Like this has lyrics. They're not like embarrassingly bad. They're not really much of anything. Really?
It's a rap about Saul Goodman. Will Smith does it. It's actually exceedingly weird.
S to the A to the U to the L.
it's a weird choice for Vince. But I thought it was bad. And then I saw him explain it in an interview. He's so fucking charming. Mm-hmm. He's just like, well, then I just thought it would be a good idea to have a little rap song, a little throwback to, you know, movies when I was young. And I was like, fuck, man.
Right. Man, that Muppet is so right about that.
Yeah. Like, what a good Muppet. What a wise cup.
Senor Suco Fresco?
Yeah. Oh, I just thought it would be a good idea. Just like, oh, little man. You
know. And we cut. We're back. We're, you know, kind of the earliest point of the timeline here. We've got Albuquerque in 2002.
Yes. We're in a courthouse. We're getting our three defendants there. The prosecution's assistant is drawing Hercules on a unicorn, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
I love whenever you cut to somebody drawing and they're doing old notebook shit.
Yep.
Quite the coolest thing you can draw.
Uh-huh.
And the judge nods to the bailiff to go get Jimmy. Jimmy's in the bathroom and he's rehearsing.
Yes.
His statement. This is pre-super confident Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. He's still got the skills. The thing, the angle he's taking, we're going to find out is the best possible angle for what he's going to do.
Yeah.
You know, nothing else was going to work. But he has to practice. He has to talk himself up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's got to get the nerve. And he goes in and he does a good job, right? Like
he does a great job.
We can see his skill at this, you know, talking about what it was like to be 19, all of those, you know, wonderful times, you know, feeling your wild oats or whatever, but you've got this underdeveloped brain, right?
Yeah. And he's talking about himself as well.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, again, as the Chicago Sunroof guy, he sees himself in these clients.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, saying, and like you said earlier, I wouldn't want to be held, you know, to account for what I did when I was 19. Right.
Yeah. You know, he tells the jury, he's like, listen, let's run down the facts. You know, these guys are idiots, but nobody was actually hurt for this. Mm-hmm. Trespassing is a little bit of a stretch because portions of the business are open to the public. And these kids are going to have their lives ruined just by a momentary lapse in judgment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ladies and gentlemen, you're bigger than that.
Yeah.
And it turns out this is not the kind of case you can win.
No.
The prosecutor doesn't say a word. He gets up, pulls out a TV VCR and puts in a camcorder tape. And what the kids had done is taped themselves cutting off a corpse's head in a mortuary, held up the old guy's head, and then dared them to fuck the throat.
Uh-huh.
to fuck the corpse throat.
Right. Videotaping this crime spree was the best idea we ever had.
I dare you to stick your willy in the hole. I'll do it if you'll do it. I wouldn't want to do that unless...
Yeah.
Just really extra.
This little, like, extremely outsized, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
And again, a little shade of that kind of movie of the week, mm-hmm. goofy client, right? Like you could see this being spun out into a half hour episode about these kids.
Yeah. Like, oh, you didn't tell me there was a tape, right?
Yeah. You didn't tell me there was a tape. You didn't tell me that you fucked it. Mm-hmm. You didn't tell me you tried to get the neck hole pregnant, you know? We cut over to the lobby and Jimmy's arguing with the clerk.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting just one fee instead of three. He's getting $700.
Yeah.
And that seems like a decent amount of money for a day's work. It's not a day's work.
No, this is the whole process.
So much prep. Yeah. This is a pittance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? And it was his decision to try all three at once, right?
Yep. He's trying to make it. Mm-hmm. We go out to the parking lot. He heads towards a car that looks like his car from Breaking Bad.
Uh-huh.
And then he heads over to the Esteem, the shitty car, Breaking Bad, still being a champion of cars, showing what kind of car somebody's at in their life.
Yeah. Car is his characterization. This sub Geo Metro car.
With the neon stanza.
With one red door.
Yes. Yeah. As he's getting there, he gets a call and he pretends to be his British secretary. Very Bob Odenkirk. This is Mr. Show shit.
Yeah. Any excuse for Bob Odenkirk to do a bad British accent.
It's excellent.
Yeah. It's arranging a meeting. Mr. and Mrs. Kettleman are potential clients. They want to meet, but his office is being painted. Can you meet at this cafe?
Yeah. And we're going to find out he's trying to fake it till he makes it.
Yes.
Basically. And we get a whatever the good version of a jump scare is. He goes to leave, but who's the parking lot attendant? But Mike Ehrmantraut.
Uh-oh.
Who pulls out a silenced gun and shoots him in the head.
Now here's what you're going to do.
Paradox. Yeah. And they get it. This Willie Loman shit. They're getting mm-hmm. into it about having enough little stamps to leave or having to pay for parking.
Mm-hmm. This whole argument of over $3.
Yeah. It's showing us going way out of its way to show us how small ball this shit is for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Mike Ehrmantraut arguing, you know, he's still Mike. He's mm-hmm. a stickler for the rules. You got, you know, full amount or no deal.
Mm-hmm.
But they are both arguing over $3 And the last time we saw them, they were titans, you know, of this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, he freaks out, you know, he goes back inside to get another stamp. He can't even just front the $3.
No,
it's worth going back inside to grab another stamp.
Calls so. Mike employee of the month for enforcing the rules.
Yeah. We go to the cafe and we meet the Kettlemans, again, comedy characters. You know, one of the things I think the series does that's so impressive is like, we can have characters like the Kettlemans or the Price, you know, Mark Price and stuff, and have them exist in a story with this much drama.
Yes.
These are cartoons. You know, if Breaking Bad felt unreal because they introduced the cousins as cartoons, Better Call Saul starts introducing cartoons from the very beginning.
Yes. We have Craig Kettleman, who's the county treasurer, who is just ridiculously meek, such a doormat. And we have Betsy, his, you know, wife who does all of the talking, and is very assertive. And man, how do you even talk about her? Like,
I don't, kind of hot.
Yeah.
In a way that's hard to explain. That's how you talk about her. I don't know.
Yeah.
And she's just, it's a little bit of like a henpeck.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. But she's a good character. This whole, like, her saying things, not until she believes them, she'll never believe them.
Yeah.
But sticking with the line, in a weird way, she is what Saul would counsel her to be.
Yes. Yeah.
In court. You know, she's already on it. Like, and there's great dialogue here.
Yeah.
You know, he's the county treasurer. He's on the hook because they lost, you know, $1.6 million. She keeps saying it's an accounting discrepancy and they're hesitant to hire him. Like, wouldn't lawyering up make us look guilty? And he says, that's a common misconception. Being arrested makes you look guilty. Innocent people get arrested every day.
Yeah.
You know, which is a true thing, like kind of woke thing to say. But like, that's, he can't, it's all about this perception.
Right.
You know, again, the same that he's dealing with as well.
Yeah.
He wants them as clients really badly. This is a big case.
Yeah. This would be high profile. This is a local government official, right? And if he can get anything for this, it'll be, you know, huge wind in his sails, right?
Yep.
But the thing is, Betsy Kettleman fucking hates Jimmy McGill.
Yes. cannot handle it. Does not trust him.
Yeah.
You know, Craig's going to sign it. We show Jimmy's licking his lips here. And Betsy notices this and says, we should think on it. You know, shouldn't we sleep on this?
Yeah.
They agree and they make up an excuse to leave.
Yeah. I was going to say that, that the Kettlemans kind of feel like Coen brothers kind of thing, but the actress who plays Betsy Kettleman was in one of those Fargo seasons. So
that makes sense.
Yeah.
So Jimmy's driving home. He's got he's on the phone with a florist offering, ordering the most expensive looking arrangement for the Kettlemans. Not actually that expensive, but looks expensive.
Yeah.
And a lifetime of watching movies has trained me, if somebody's driving and they're on a cell phone, I know they're getting into an accident. It just happens. And it happens here.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere, a skateboarder slams into the hood of his car and breaks his windshield.
And he's completely wrecked by this. Jimmy is like, he's on the edge of tears. Like, oh my God, I can't believe
the worst. In the worst possible time for this to happen.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, he gets out, the guy's clearly alive, but like, I can't fucking handle this now. Right. We see this, he's teetering on the edge.
Yeah.
You know, where we start here, these characters, cartoons, tall skateboarding guys who are twins. One of them's filming the other one on a camcorder, and they're going to call the police. Jimmy says, don't call the police. And they start saying, you're going to have to make this right. You know, it's going to be $500. And Jimmy sees through this.
Yeah.
You know, and this is great. This is perfect.
He kicks them and says, hey, listen, Starlight Express, I'm going to give you a 9.6 for technique, but a 0.0 for choosing a victim.
Yeah. Look at my car. The only thing way that's worth $500 is if there's a $300 prostitute in the back, you know,
does this scream payday to you?
Yeah. Idiots. Like, don't try to kid a kidder. You know, now let's talk about you giving me money for the windshield. And they run away.
Yeah. So, windshields never surviving in this universe.
Yes. He gets, to where his office is, the nail salon. You're run by Mrs. Nguyen. She's like, I heard the people you work with, they had sex with a head.
Gary, I love Mrs. Nguyen so much.
Yeah. Great. Jimmy tries to give himself some cucumber water, and Jimmy knows that's for customers only. Again, piling on indignities.
It's the same nail salon that he was trying to plot off onto Jesse.
Yeah. We get this incredible moment, though. We get this really intriguing, very smart bit of writing here. He goes back to his office. He has zero messages. He goes through his bills. It's all, you know, file notice, late notice, the kind of thing that happens in TV and stuff. You know? But then he finds a letter from HHM, and it's a check for $26,000 addressed to him. And we've watched this whole thing of the indignities. We understand he's in financial insecurity. And without hesitating, you know, a little bit, he tears it up. It's a really intriguing detail.
Yeah.
Like, you're just like, well, why? Okay. Something's going on that we don't know. Like, it's just very smart writing and very economical, like in teaching us about Jimmy, his values, and the situation.
And drawing some, you know, echoing of Walt, right?
Yeah.
You just,
exactly.
Here is somebody from his past that he fucking resents who is trying to make things easier, and he is not going to accept it.
And the reason he's not going to accept it is not for pride Walt reasons necessarily. You know, this is done from love that is, we're going to find out, is misplaced. Love for somebody who doesn't deserve it.
Yeah.
You know? So we cut over to him in an elevator in the HHM parking garage. He looks at this dented trash can. Again, shades of Breaking Bad. We're going to find it later. Barges into this conference room. He knows everybody there.
Yeah.
You get to see that. He talks to everybody. They don't like him. And he screams a line from Network. You know, you have meddled with the primal forces of nature, Mr. Hamlin, and I won't have it. I love Jimmy's old movie thing.
Oh, God. And just finding out that it is like that, that has to be the thing that initially got him and Kim to bond because they have that in common.
Yeah. Ice Station Zebra shit.
But, you know, they're all sitting at the far end of the room and they're just like unsure of how to react to this. And Jamie drops the shreds of the check on the table, you know, asking like, hey, what's this? You know, well, like what's this stunt?
And now this penny ante bullshit.
Yeah. And Howard says, oh, that's that, you know, that's for Chuck, right? It's made out to you because, you know, Chuck, you know, is he able to go to the bank? We get the idea that like he is completely laid up, like coma. Yeah. Coma times.
I love this sequence of scenes, him burning up the, you know, ripping up the check. So we're like wondering about that, getting here and getting first mention of Chuck and hearing the something's wrong to him. He can't, you know, he can't get to the bank. We don't know what it is. And then seeing what it is.
Yeah.
Getting these little hints before we actually get the reveal here. And Jimmy says, no, you know, this isn't, this is penny ante. Like his name is on the board here. He basically built this place. He needs one third of this.
Yeah.
Like this is, you're trying to make a paper trail to make it look like Chuck still works here. You need to buy him out properly and do right by him. $17 million
Yeah.
You know, and the, we're getting this back and forth. Howard says, oh, that's what Chuck wants. And Jimmy doesn't have a counter for this.
No.
So it's so economical. We're learning so much about everyone's relationship just through what people know and don't know. From each other. It's incredibly confident writing in this first episode.
Very much so. Just kind of leaving it there. Like, oh, that's what, you know, that's what Chuck wants. You know, Jimmy even just straight up says, like, we know he's not coming back. Right.
Yeah. He says, oh, this is what's in his best interest. He can't say this is what he wants because it's not, he's going behind his back.
Yeah. You know, and Howard says, no, he's going to beat this. Right. And Jimmy says, well, okay, well, we'll tell that to a jury. They're going to love you. Right.
Yeah. Jimmy leaves. He screams another Network quote and then yells at everyone for not knowing Network. I've never seen Network.
It's good. So,
yeah. Jimmy would not like me. I'm sure it is. Like, it's just one of those things, the opportunity just never came up.
Yeah.
Howard follows him out and says, listen, you know, I've got the filings for Chuck, you know? And Jimmy's like, what are you doing? I'm not going to help you make a paper trail for this. You know, this idea that Chuck's still keeping up with his work, even though he can't come in.
Yeah.
And Howard calls out and says, listen, sometimes in our line of work, you get so caught up in the idea of winning that you forget to listen to your heart.
Yeah.
I don't think that's what's happening with Jimmy.
No.
I don't think he's trying to win. I think he does want, at this point, he does want what's best for Chuck. You know, obviously it would be helpful to him if Chuck became a millionaire.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. I don't think this is purely cynical at this point.
Yeah. But also I think that Howard means this when he's saying it, right? Not just because it's in his own interest, not to have to cash out Chuck at this point, but you know, we're going to see their relationship later. Right.
Yeah. He believes maybe, you know, that's what Jimmy is doing. As Jimmy's leaving, he sees Howard talking to the Kettlemans.
Yeah.
They've gone to a bigger law firm. And this is, you know, again, this guy is so fucking put upon. He goes to the elevator to the garage, kicks the shit out of this trash can in the vestibule, and we get, again, a really beautiful shot here. The camera pulls out. We see Kim smoking. Jimmy joins her, takes her cigarette without saying anything, takes a drag, and gives it back to her. She was in the meeting as well. You know, that is an interesting relationship thing. There's an intimacy to just taking a cigarette from somebody and giving it back.
Yeah. Not even like saying hi or whatever. Just like, you know, we're beyond that. You can just walk up.
Yep.
Yeah.
And he says, can't you just, and she just says, I know, you know, I can't. He leaves and she goes and puts the trash can back.
Mm-hmm.
The trash can is already dented. This has happened before.
Mm-hmm.
Great, very economical insight into the relationship with, you know, what, 6 words,
yep.
7 words.
We see the entire shape of it. You know,
really
right
good
there.
Stuff.
Yeah. And it's not like later stuff contradicts this at all. Like,
no,
it just kind of expands on it. Like, this is a perfect little seed, right?
It's Vince Gilligan's trick, right? Like, mm-hmm. we talk about this in Breaking Bad a lot. He leaves himself, he cast forward.
Yes.
You know, he does little things like this that leave him space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he will sometimes create literal hooks that he'll pick up, but he also, it's very important to let things grow.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a philosophy as a creator that I respect. Like, in terms of making stuff, like, and I think about this primarily with music,
mm-hmm.
but like, and I'm not putting myself on any kind of level, I'm an idiot, but like, the idea that when you create, I think it is a more respectable and fun posture to discover through creation.
Yeah, yeah.
As opposed to just like call your shot, mm-hmm. right? Like, I think that people sometimes think that the act of creating is you have built a perfect temple in your mind palace mm-hmm. and you're going to now see it realized.
Yeah.
And that works for some people and that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the only or best way to create. Like, having this kind of idea and collaborating with people and being surprised by your own work
mm-hmm.
is the best feeling in the world.
Yeah.
Cutting yourself off from that fucking sucks.
It's,
and like, all our favorite creators do that constantly.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when we were talking about REM a lot, we learn about that, like them doing these demos and stuff and things becoming totally different things than they expected.
Yeah.
In the end.
It, you know, this is like the big takeaway from Stephen King's On Writing, aside from don't use adverbs, which is kind of bad advice, but, just him talking about the process of creation as actually just like discovery, right? Like, I am doing archaeology to like dig this out intact. And I am kind of as surprised at the shape of this as you are. Right.
It's amazing that the archaeology always just ends with a horrible ending. He digs really deep and he just finds, oh, this doesn't have a good ending. It just kind of ends.
Yeah. He's pretty bad at getting that bottom part out. Yeah.
Yeah. He's good up until that point.
yeah. Love it. God, I'm so excited to talk about how this relationship develops.
Yeah. It's really good. Like, yeah, it's very good. So we get to Jimmy going to Chuck's house and just think of the day he's had, right? Mm-hmm. To be confronted with this shit when he gets there.
Yeah.
And he leaves his car keys, cell phone and stuff in the mailbox,
mm-hmm.
Grounds himself on a spike in the door and comes inside and it's all dark.
Yeah.
Chuck is typing away at a typewriter. Jimmy puts ice in the cooler. He's a caretaker,
mm-hmm.
By this breaker box. The wiring has been ripped out.
Yeah.
You know, and this is how this guy has his refrigerator. We're learning about this guy's, condition and how much Jimmy is taking responsibility for him.
Oh yeah. Like when the list of duties comes out for that poor intern later on, you know, it's like, okay, well you got to wake up at 6 a.m. because only this one newsstand across the town, across the city has the Financial Times. So you got to do that. Like,
and what an act of love, right?
Uh-huh.
Like what a ludicrous act of devotion.
Yeah.
You know, that Jimmy's doing here. Like, caretaking is one of the most intense acts you can do.
Mm-hmm.
And serve as love. And it's fucking on deaf ears.
Yeah.
You know, it is unappreciated to the extreme.
Mm-hmm.
I fucking hate Chuck. Like, I love him. He's a great character. But in terms of like characters you hate
mm-hmm.
in a show, Chuck is really up there for me.
Yeah.
I fucking hate Chuck.
Yeah. And like, it's a little bit hard like to come to that because he is so fucking miserable already. Right.
Yeah.
Like, and it's of his own making, you know, like it's, I'm not an expert on electromagnetic sensitivity or however that is. I do believe the suffering is real, you know, or something.
In Chuck's case, it's very specifically psychosomatic.
Oh,
we're going to find out.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
And again, the economics of this, they reveal that in this first episode, Chuck says, did you ground yourself?
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't feel it. He just has to ask.
Yes.
You know, if you say no, I will start feeling the symptoms. Since you said yes, I won't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They tell you right in the first episode, you know, there are things that kind of suggest, oh, maybe it's real, maybe it's fake as we go on, but it's signaling to you right away, no, this isn't a dude's mind.
Yeah. This is other stuff manifesting. This is a break that he has had, and we see the things that contribute to it, and we see the things that cause it to flare up, right?
Yes. And to go down. Like, he can turn it off when he wants to as well.
Yes. Yeah. You know, when Jimmy does Jimmy stuff, it acts up. When he feels guilty, it acts up, right? Like,
he's writing into somebody who has who's doing research on this electromagnetic sensitivity, and it just adds to Jimmy's task. He's like, hey, you're gonna have to get this translated. You can probably get it translated at, you know, University of New Mexico.
Mm-hmm. With, like, what money, what a fucking Chuck? Chore. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it is just the way that he doesn't even think about asking it, like he's just handing it off to an intern, right, or something.
And the later the same sentence where he's like, I didn't ask you to do this.
Uh-huh.
It's such bullshit, right? You know, Jimmy's like, hey, can we talk? His initial thing is, you're in trouble.
Yeah. Oh, you're not in trouble. Talk
because you've been, And Jimmy says, no, you need to cash out.
Yeah.
You know, this is ridiculous. And Chuck's saying, like, no, I'm going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand this, but you don't have the full facts.
Yeah.
And then Chuck makes a point that is, like, later leverage in the series that's good, where it's like they would have to liquidate the law firm.
Mm-hmm.
That would cost, you know, 200 people their jobs.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to do that. That's a good point.
Uh-huh.
Right? Like, in terms of justice, like, yes, they should cash out because they owe him this.
Mm-hmm.
At the other end of it, like, this person, Kim, who he cares about, and then there's also people we like, Ernesto, poor Ernesto, we don't want to have lose their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, like, it is a big deal to do this.
Big business like that doesn't keep their entire value in liquid, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he says, Chucky says, you know, that money is beside the point. You know, and Jimmy says, I've been doing this. We need to do this. I've been doing this public defense work for you. I can't just keep carrying you, you know, and Chuck immediately, again, it's academic for him.
Yes.
Oh, public defense work is some of the best experience you can get.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the money isn't the point. You're doing good and you're getting, you know, you're going to arrive. You're going to get there, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
He's in his 40s.
Yeah.
You don't need to hear, like, oh, this, you're getting good experience.
Like, oh, you need to, you need to take your licks. Like, you've got to
put in your dues. Yeah. He's put in his fucking dues and Chuck will never see it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jimmy said, no, money is the point.
Yeah.
I didn't want to tell you this. You're broke.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I can't just keep doing this for you. You don't have this money.
Yeah.
But it turns out he's like, no, I'm not. I do have money. Howard's been giving me a weekly stipend.
Yeah. I was like, wait, Howard was here? You know, almost like, okay, so he's going behind my back. And Chuck says something that is not true. It's not like I'm a recluse.
Yeah, I can have visitors. And it's doing the thing that Jimmy went and made a big scene to try to prevent, creating this paper trail.
Yeah.
You know, that Chuck works there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Jimmy says, listen, he's making you look like a chump, you know, and this touches a nerve.
Mm-hmm.
And Chuck breaks and says, I'm going to get better.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to get better and I pick up right where I left off.
Yeah. And you know? this cows Jimmy, right? Like, the voice being raised, you know, just puts him back in his place, right? He gets meek about it.
He gets meek about it. And he doesn't want to tell his brother he's not going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not necessarily that it's never going to happen. I think Jimmy knows that it's fake, you know, or that he's imagining it at some point, or, you know, and that this would be a better choice for him overall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then Chuck moves on to a new subject and is so quietly insulting about this whole thing, you know, saying, listen, you know, Howard's pretty concerned that you're practicing under the name McGill. You know, don't you think that causes some confusion with HHM?
Yeah.
You know, how about Vanguard Law or Gibraltar? And it's his fucking name.
It's, yeah. such a ridiculous thing to say. Like, I can't use my name getting this identity stuff out here right away. Like, he never is able to effectively work under the name he was born with.
Yeah. And again, it's so important that he's 40.
Yes.
Like, this is all stuff that you say to somebody who is a teen or somebody who's coming up, you know, in the ranks, like a hot, fresh 24-year-old.
Yeah.
You could say this kind of shit to. You don't say this to your peer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you don't say this to family.
No. No.
Right? God, I hate Chuck.
Yeah.
Jimmy
asks, like, hey, you know, whose side are you on? Chuck says, there are no sides. But Jimmy, wouldn't you rather build your own identity? Why ride on someone else's coattails?
Yeah. And it's like, again, it's my fucking name.
Mm-hmm.
And there are sides.
Yeah.
You know, he dodges it.
Yep.
Jimmy goes out of the car, looks at the matchbook with his name on it, with the thing. And he says, you know, do you want to dance, Howard? Let's dance.
Right.
Fuck you.
Mm-hmm. I want to go back to the, you know, why ride on someone else's coattails? Again, getting this kind of resentment in here. Chuck doesn't want anything to do. He's like, why ride on my coattails? Right.
Yes. Yeah. He does not want to be associated
right
with him. And that's going to be kind of an undercurrent in any way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, again, it's takes a lot to not just keep watching the show. It also takes a lot not to just call forward,
yeah.
You know, but like, you know, literally, you know, I don't actually care for you that much.
Mm-hmm.
Like he fucking, it's like, I don't actually care for Job, but if she said it to Job, absolutely brutal, devastating shit.
Yeah.
Like, I don't have a brother. I don't mm-hmm. have siblings, but like, I understand love.
Mm-hmm.
You could argue, you know, I can conceptualize a familial love.
Uh-huh.
And it just, it's the empathy for, you know, for Jimmy in this
mm-hmm.
is incredible. Like he makes his own bed, like, but at the same time, this series is more about sympathy
yeah.
for him than, you know, I have sympathy for Walt at certain points in Breaking Bad as well.
Yeah.
This is a more sympathetic character and we get there by starting way earlier in his journey.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, seeing how little of a difference any of this makes for his relationship yeah. with Chuck, who just takes and takes, right?
Yep. So we cut over to his plan. And one of the joys of the show are schemes and capers.
Yep.
Every single time it happens, it's delightful.
Mm-hmm.
It's my favorite thing in the world. I love watching a scheme. I love watching a caper.
Mm-hmm.
Just
give me, like, it's almost like a heist, right? I need to see the, like, what's the game here, right?
Yep. It's very cool. It makes me very happy.
who against? Who are we doing exactly. this against?
Who against? And, like, the answer is always fun, even though it never works out for our protagonist.
Never.
So we find that the twins, they're filming 6 skateboard videos
mm-hmm.
there. And Jimmy walks up saying, hey, we have business, hear me out.
Mm-hmm.
They say, you know, how do you find us? And it pans back to just saying skate. of course, skaters yeah. are at the skate
yeah. park. What are the odds?
Yeah. And he gives a little monologue
yeah.
here, you know, about his past.
Yeah.
You know, let me tell you a story about a guy named Slippin' Jimmy.
Mm-hmm. King you know? Of Cicero, Illinois. Kind of yep. one of these little, like, it's not, you're from around Chicago.
Yeah, yeah. This is my country.
Yeah. Like, what would you call this? Like, it's its own like municipality in the metro area, I guess.
Yeah, basically. It's yeah. not quite a suburb, but
it's not city. Quite a neighborhood. Yeah.
It's somewhere between those two. It's like an outer neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know what I'd say?
Mm-hmm.
He's talking about, you know, the winters being deadly. That is true.
Mm-hmm.
I hear. And the reason why Jimmy liked the winters is because it was slip and fall season.
Yeah. Yeah, one good you know, fall, and he'd clear 6 or 8 grand, and that would keep him in old Milwaukee and Maui. Wow, you right through Labor Day.
Yep, what he would do, and their kids are impressed
mm-hmm.
by this. And he says, "Listen, you know, what's your best day?" And there's $630, and that was for 2 falls.
Yeah,
you know, he basically says, and that would, you know, your body's not taking that over and over. That's not worth it.
Yeah.
You know, shit hurts.
Mm-hmm.
You know how to take a fall, but even then it hurts.
Yes.
I have a job for you and it'll be $2,000 and just one hit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he talks about his plan here.
Yeah. So he takes them to like scope it out. They're outside the Kettleman house. The Kettlemans, who are trying to, you know, defend themselves against accusations of embezzlement, just bought a gigantic boat.
Yes.
And he makes them memorize the appearance of Betsy's car, a medium Mercury Sable wagon. That's brown. No, it's sandalwood. It's medium sandalwood. Yeah.
And this is, we've gotten scenes like this all over Breaking Bad, you know, a Mike or Walt being like, now read it back to me,
mm-hmm.
you know, like memorize the thing. Saul's not that good at that yet. And mm-hmm. he's bad at choosing his people.
Yeah.
Cause these kids fuck it up.
Mm-hmm.
He takes them to the corner. The idea is they're going to do a slip and fall or go out and get hit by her. Mm-hmm. He's going to come along at the right moment, be kind of a white knight, you know,
yeah.
and really ingratiate himself to her, you know, so she'll hire him.
Mm-hmm.
She gets the money once he gets paid, he says, or they get the money once he gets paid.
Yeah.
He's in a car rehearsing what to say to Betsy. And he calls the twins. Hey, she's leaving.
Yeah.
A 2-minute warning. However, a different car comes through.
Yeah.
Similar, but different.
Yeah, it's a brown Ford Taurus. And then they say, like, okay, now they signal and we're, you know, we're getting ready to do it. And, you know, the fallen twin. Sorry, mm-hmm. That's a Dark Souls name. The fallen twin. Yeah. You know, slams into it. But the driver doesn't get out. Like, there's just a pause. And then it just kind of drives away. It's a hit and run. I love this. You know, where's your sense of responsibility?
Yeah, yelling at her. They call Jimmy. You know, and Jimmy's saying, stay there, you know, don't do anything. And they're not going to, you know, we're following her. We got our ways, yo. Mm-hmm. And they're skitching on the highway.
Yep. Terrible idea. The
terrible idea. Also exceedingly silly.
Yeah.
Just really, really silly shit. You know, they're like, listen, what do we need you for?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like he's saying, you fell into the honeypot. She fucking hit you. She's going to want to settle. And they're like, well, why would we split this with you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they pull into a house. It's definitely not the Kettleman's. The driver is an old Latino woman,
mm-hmm.
and she does not speak English.
Yeah.
You know, she's trying to talk back to them, but, and they're trying to, you know, strong arm her, but she can't respond.
No. She just understands, you know, there's a make with the dinero, you know, see righteous dinero.
Yeah. Get some righteous dinero.
Yeah. Yeah, she understands that. And so she leads them to the front door, you know, pulling them inside and calling for Mijo. Calling for her grandson.
Some dark foreshadowing.
Yeah.
This is my new crime series where I've had an Hispanic character and the name is De Niro.
Uh-huh.
Jimmy pulls up to the house. He finds it based on them kind of giving directions and finds their skateboards.
Yeah.
Knocks on the door saying, listen, you know, let me in. I'm an officer of the law, mm-hmm. officer of the court. And who comes, you know, gun pops out mm-hmm. and it turns out this is Tuco.
Yeah.
Tuco pulls him in.
Mm-hmm. And this is the chance encounter that fucking ruins everybody's life. Everything can be traced back to this.
100%. Like a bunch of things happen because of this.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, when you watch it, it is a little bit of like, you see your old favorites. Isn't it mm-hmm. nice to see Tuco do Tuco shit?
Yeah.
You know, like it's, I think that they can get away with that early on in the series.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before it kind of has its own legs, right? Like mm-hmm. Tuco's appearance in this feels a little bit like a booster rocket.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's going to burn off and then the series can continue with its own characters.
Yeah. I remember kind of cocking my eyebrow when I got to this. Yeah.
It happened right after the skitching.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, man, what kind of show is this going to be?
Yeah.
You know, oh, we're skitching now mm-hmm. and Tuco's back. A little eye rolly.
Yeah.
You know, but it ends up actually working out. Yep. Again, you stay for the whole equation. They solve it.
Yes. Yeah. They were trying to decide who this was going to be. Like the initial plan was, you know, they would end up at the Hamlin house and the plot lines would kind of connect there. But they just asked who was the worst person that Jimmy could run into. And, you know, we've got Tuco's knocking around. Yeah.
Raymond Cruz came back, even though he does not like playing Tuco.
Nope.
Cause he's not that kind of guy. He doesn't want to be typecast just as a heavy. Mm-hmm. We get a lot of Tuco mm-hmm. in the series and he's still great.
Yeah.
You know, this, I've said this a billion times during the Breaking Bad season, people don't like the cartel stuff in mm-hmm. Better Call Saul. I think that there's like, if we didn't have this in the series, we'd have more time with Jimmy and Kim mm-hmm. and stuff. I don't think that's necessarily true.
Right.
And I love all the cartel stuff.
Yeah.
I want to see this stuff.
That's how we get Mike. And yep. that's how we get, I mean, the Nacho. Moment. Yeah. That's how we get Nacho. Yeah.
I mean, Nacho's great.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are stories worth telling as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's Uno, just quietly one of the most efficient, you know, there's some kind of groany parts in it, you know, some first season weirdness that they're going to shake off, but very efficient
mm-hmm.
For a first episode, like really, really gets you going
mm-hmm.
in terms of knowing stuff. It's weird. It's better when you've seen it, when you know that all these things add up to something.
When you know it's going somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it is something that benefits a lot from a second watch, I think, because like, I know it's going somewhere and I'm seeing what they're doing.
Yeah. Just the amount of things that are just unsaid that I didn't pick up on. Right.
Yes.
And going back to it in hindsight, going back to that, interaction with Kim, right. You know, taking the cigarette and all that, just like, okay, they're establishing like a romantic relation here, something like that. Like understanding just how much is packed into that they didn't even know that they were doing at the time. Probably.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really impressive stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, very exciting to start talking about this.
Mm-hmm.
So, what can people do?
Well, if you like this show, the biggest thing that you can do for us is spread the word. We're starting a new series here. If you know somebody who's really into Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul, if you know somebody who likes the show a lot, send them our way, right?
Yeah. I got a use case I'm going to pitch people.
Okay.
Breaking Bad is more intense and crimey mm-hmm. than this show is for the most part. Maybe you know somebody who wants to watch Better Call Saul, but doesn't want to watch Breaking Bad.
Ooh.
Have I got a podcast for them?
Yeah. All of that's behind us there. This is episode 69.
Yeah. Nice. You can listen to 68 episodes of this and get that sense of, you know, a good and thorough recap of Breaking Bad that will serve as a primer for this mm-hmm. and tell you what you need to know.
Yeah.
You can also leave us ratings and reviews. You can, you can join us on Patreon.
Yeah.
Go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Listen to all our bonus shows. Mm-hmm. And possibly most importantly, and directly, keep the lights on.
Yeah.
This is our job. If you like our shows and you want us to keep doing it, that is how we keep our houses hot.
Yes. Yeah. Huge thanks to our new album artist, Zilla. And mm-hmm. Jonathan, thank you, our producer, Gwen, who also composed our theme song.
Big thanks to Gwen. Until next time, like, don't skitch.
Yeah.
It's not even fun in Tony Hawk.
Not really, no. It's just a way to string combos together, but it's not even the most fun one.
Not even combo. You get a little bit of speed.
Yeah.
And then it just ends up becoming like a task in the later not as good ones where it's like, can you skitch for 15 seconds? It's like, I guess. It's the same fucking balance meter.